this episode of GeoTalk, we travel around southern Victoria as two caches attempt to set a new record. We send out an alert to those of you in the New South Wales Central Coast, and we ask you what you want from Santa this Christmas. All this and a bit more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to GeoTalk episode 66 for November 2010. And the weather's getting very warm in some parts of the country, but certainly the days are very long, and there's even time now to go out caching in the daylight after work. So it's always a good time of the year. And I hope that you're finding many caches that you're enjoying and certainly making it worthwhile getting out in the bush. Well, talking about getting out and about, some of you might know that the Spin Doctors recently went overseas. We went to the southern Pacific island nation of Samoa, and we had a great time. And of course, the GPS did come in the bag with us. There was only one cache for us to find. It was a virtual, which was right near the capital city of Apia. And it's the tomb of a famous Scottish writer who ended up living in Samoa by the name of Robert Louis Stevenson. And if you don't know who he is, he wrote books such as Treasure Island and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He was well-loved in Samoa, and he passed away about 150 years ago, and he was buried up on the top of a hill near the capital. And it's certainly an adventure getting to that virtual cache. But while I was there, I decided to take along a yellow E-Trex and a cache that I put together, and I met up with some people on the island of Savahi, and I've hidden a cache and taught them all about geocaching and donated the GPS to the local high school. And hopefully in the next few weeks we'll have a cache there published, and the local kids at the high school will learn a little bit about GPS and how they can use it to help them not only in just geography and mapping and so forth, but maybe in land use, and even learn about the technology behind it. And hopefully too, I'll put together some earth caches in that area, and who knows, we might have started geocaching as a popular activity in the islands of Samoa. Now, while I was getting that GPS, which was on sale at a store here in Sydney, when I went to pay for it, the E-Trax was for $99, which seems to be an acceptable price at the moment, even though it's a discontinued GPS. They had a couple of Gecko 101s in the cabinet there on sale, and you won't believe the price, $239 for Gecko 101s. Now, I don't know if many people remember them. They were around back in 2003 when I started geocaching, but gee, they haven't been around for a lot longer, quite a while. I think they stopped them very soon afterwards. And to think that the store wanted to sell them for $239, and I offered to take a couple off their hands for $50 each, but no, they've decided to keep them in there. So I'm wondering, have you seen any obsolete GPSs for sale at ridiculous prices like those? Maybe let us know. A lot of chatter going on around blogs and forums at the moment about opencaching.com. Now, you might have remembered last episode we talked about opencaching.us and the open caching movement that's been going around Europe and into Japan and so forth. Now, that particular one is very similar to Geocaching Australia, where it's a community-run website, and it's very open, and it it doesn't really have any financial support apart from the people that contribute towards it. Well, opencaching.com has recently come into most people's awareness because someone worked out recently that Garmin owned the name of opencaching.com, and they've been making some changes to the landing page. Now, that's all that's there at the moment. It's just a landing page. And there's been a lot of controversy about what Garmin, or a lot of discussion about what Garmin are up to, and a lot of discussion about, you know, this sort of fracture that's occurred, possible fracture between Groundspeak and Garmin. Now, I'm not going to speculate on what exactly has happened. There's been a lot of discussion about it, and you can do a Google search or search any of the forums and find out a bit more about it. But I'm sure between now and sometime soon, we're going to find out a little bit more about opencaching.com. Now, I received an email just in the last few days, actually. It's an environmental alert that's come from someone up on the central coast of New South Wales, and I'll read it out in full. This is what they say. You may have heard over the last few months of an outbreak of myrtle rust on the New South Wales central coast. Now, while containment in the nurseries has been largely successful, in recent weeks, the situation has worsened with its detection in bushland in several reserves. These reserves have been closed down and extensive control works are underway as we speak. There is a risk that anyone moving through bushland could potentially be spreading the disease via spores on clothing, including hats, within a reserve or from one reserve to another. Now, myrtle rust is a South American rust fungus. It's previously been unknown in Australia, and it has the potential to devastate more than 5,000 species of plants, and that includes eucalypts, tea trees, bottle brushes, paper barks, and lily pillies, some of the most iconic and valuable bushland plants that we have here in Australia. So the current situation for the control program is to eradicate the disease, and what needs to be done is people need to be staying out of those areas. So if you're a geocacher in the Sydney or Hunter Valley region or on the Central Coast, just be aware that some of these parklands will be closed off, and please don't ignore those closure notices. Now, I know that down in Victoria, they've had a similar problem in the Brisbane Ranges and some of those other parts around west of Melbourne with cinnamon fungus, causing problems with a lot of the Xanthorrhoea plants. So look, when all geocachers really around the country and around the world, take note of some of the restrictions that are put in place, particularly in bushlands and in native bushlands around the country, and because we don't want to give geocaching a bad name, and we want to protect the environment in which we play this game. Well, that's enough of me going on for a while. It's time now to head across the ditch over to New Zealand, and here's Radio Nut 50.
Yeah, hi there again from Radio Nut 50, Alan in Hamilton, New Zealand. Firstly, to the Warrego editor. I'm sure those who've set up the Warrego caches have all shared a common opinion of the disastrous editor provided through the Groundspeak site. This thing has never been developed beyond the alpha release or the experimental stage only. This editor crashes very often during development of a Warrego cartridge. In a number of cases I'm aware of, potential caches have simply been abandoned because of complete frustration with having to do the work again and again and again. Well, I've just had brought to my attention a thread on the Groundspeak forums for a new editor called URWIGO, I think. URWIGO. The program's not principally in the English language, developed, I think, in the Czech Republic, but it's getting great reviews, and the forum thread includes obvious active support for the users. So those considering preparing a Warrego cache, this is certainly a worthwhile look. There'll be a reference in the show notes to the forum, which also points to where to download the software. Well, Butterfly Lady and I were caching in Christchurch, Timaru area last month, and as usual, we were taken to a really large number of interesting places by this hobby. Two of our nights were in Christchurch, and we didn't experience any of those multiple aftershocks that the long-suffering community is still experiencing, but we made it a target to find the new earthquake-related caches. As expected, there's a cache named Epicenter, and while being at the technical centre of the main earthquake, it was in a quiet area of farmland with typical Canterbury hedges and absolutely no sign of an earthquake damage around. But nearby were two other caches, and they were a different story. We moved to a cache called Kinky, and another one called To a Fault. They're all within 5 kilometres of that epicentre, but these are at points where those traditional Canterbury Plains long straight roads are no longer straight. Both of these locations have distinct S-bends in the road now, and they'll be there forever. The whole land has moved to the left on one side and right on the other side, and we encountered the fairly expected number of Muggle local tourists all taking photos of this road showing new kinks. But we reflected on the advantages of this hobby we're in. These rural areas are not signposted, and non-geocaching friends of ours who were in the area a few weeks earlier tried in vain to find the locations they'd seen on television, but our hobby again took us on a direct path to the best locations to see it. Now, every now and again you come across a gem of a themed cache container. While in our holiday in the South Canterbury area recently, we came across a cache called Eat Your Veggies. And noting that the find was on the side of a road in remote country area with sheep farming all around, we're pretty curious what we're going to find. Well, in one of New Zealand's well-known native palm trees called a cabbage tree, we found a cute container, a little cabbage man with a cache inside. Well done, Ernie NZ. A well-presented hide. We laughed all our way back into the car. Well, as I prepare this, we've just returned to Hamilton after a very enjoyable weekend in the Tiara area and walking in a nearby historic parkland of the Wairangamai Valley. It's around 5 kilometres south of the Tiaraha town. This valley has a grand history of gold mining in the mid to late 1800s and is a special collection of industrial artefacts to find out in the bush. Now, a highly enterprising rail tramway was developed there in the 1860s, involving 3 long sections of level rail and 3 large self-acting inclines where the wagons were let down and lifted up by rope. The special thing at Wairangamai, though, is that much of that tramway and many of the machines are still in place. And as could be expected, some knowledgeable local cachers have laid hides in the key locations to take cachers to see this history. There are now fewer than 8 caches to find in this immediate area. One of these is a multi and another a puzzle, but the rest are traditionals. And on this, our second trip into the valley, we covered around 10 kilometres in a loop and found 5 of these, having grabbed the remainder of them on a previous trip. Now, this is a fascinating place. So if you enjoy walking through our New Zealand native bush, seeking streams and waterfalls and beautiful scenery, and have a bent like mine to enjoy railways and industrial history from well back in our young country's life, I'd seriously recommend a trip to Tiaraha on the west of Bay and Plenty and up the Wairangamai Valley. The caches range from simple pickups by the car park through to, well, as far as we went, was about 5 kilometres into the bush. Then, of course, you can keep going. There's some really keen mountaineer caches further up. And so to a quick roundup of events in New Zealand. It's getting near Christmas, so we've got Tramper Ted's Christmas campaign on the 12th of December in Auckland. We've got 12 Days of Christmas as an event in Hamilton by Butterfly Lady on the 18th of December. We've got Box Hill's Christmas Bun Fight in Wellington on the 19th of December. And then into January, we've got the Cromwell Cacia Catch-Up 2011 on the 2nd of January by PHIKI614. Now for my last thought, when you have some cases hidden in your name, it's always most interesting to read the logs as they come in by email. They range from the rather disappointing TFTC through to quite detailed stories at times. One of our newish hides is at a historic water tank where the steam railway engines filled up to 50 years ago. This tank is right up against an active railway, so I have lots of warnings for caches to keep away from the tracks. Well, we got a log this week that was most interesting. It said it was a drive-by with a difference. Pulled up alongside GZ in my train, easy find. So that's something most of us won't experience, caching by train. Well, with that thought, that's the lot from New Zealand at the moment. Back to you, Darren.
Well, thanks for that, Alan. That's a great update. And just on the Where I Go platform and the Your I Go or whatever it's called, Builder, if you catch Caches of the Round Table, their last episode, and go to cachesroundtable.com, you can actually listen to a one-hour discussion about Where I Go and the different players and the different builders and where the panel think that will go. So that's quite an interesting discussion about the Where I Go Builder. That's cachesroundtable.com. Well, it's time now for the GeoTalk trivia question for this podcast. And the question is, how many caches are there in Australia and New Zealand that were planted in 2000 that still exist today? The answer to that at the end of the podcast.
Good morning, it's Covert Hypnosis here. Just round to tell you about my day planned geocaching. I'm heading out this Vladimir's now, 4:10 in the morning. and I'm just driving down to Elwood where I'm meeting Splatham. I just got a push box in the back, and we're starting off with the Where I Go case just down in that direction. There's actually two which are played in the same cartridge. It's interesting. It's a time trial where in one direction you just have to beat 8 minutes, which is an average of about 26 kilometres per hour for the 3.6 kilometre trip or thereabouts. In the other direction, you actually have to beat the last person's time, which is currently at about 5 minutes 20, which I believe will be a bit difficult. I don't plan to do the harder one today. I plan to do that in the plane one of these days, but for now I'm just doing the 8-minute one along with Splatham. And then we're going to get another 9 geocaches in the day. Not just any old 9 completely different ones. So there's a letterbox cache not far from there. Then after being at Elwood, we're heading down to Geelong, actually past Geelong, the Queenslip, to get our picture taken on a webcam down there. And then from there, we're heading up to an event in Bendigo. So there's a 3-hour drive up to there. Morning tea event, which is good. Probably grab a Earth cache while we're there too. And then we're heading back down to Elwood for the caching trash out. All up, 10 different cache types in one day. So fingers crossed everything's going to go well. We're hedging our bets on a few. There's only 2 letterbox caches we have access to, so we actually can drive past either of those. We're checking the closest one first. If that's not there, we're then going to go for the one that's further away. That will take us a bit more time to get, but we cover our bases there. But as long as that webcam works, we're pretty much covered and can't stuff this up. So fingers crossed, everything will be fine. I'll bring in throughout the day to check in, and maybe Splatton will say a word or two. I'll have a chat to him when I catch up and we get the push bikes out.
Good morning. It's Splatton and Covert Hypnosis signing in. We're on the hunt. The hunt is on. We've found the postman Pat and his black and white cat letterbox cache, and we've also attempted the local Where I Go cache by Philip. Wasn't entirely successful. We had a few issues with getting it started, and in fact we weren't able to get it started. So we've done a track log, and hopefully we'll get a chance to speak to him a bit further throughout the day and rectify the problem and maybe get another chance at that tonight. So now we're now on the road at 6:10 a.m. local time in Melbourne, and we're in overcast Elwood heading towards Queenscliff for a webcam. Covert and Splatham signing off. Splatham and Covert again, 7:48 a.m. and we've just logged a ripper cache down at Queenscliff in Victoria. Now heading towards Geelong with the final destination being Bendigo for an event. Splatham and Covert signing out. Splatham and Covert again, it's 12:30 p.m. Melbourne time, and we're just leaving Bendigo having found the puzzle cache being Sudoku in Bendigo, and also the Earth cache, Alexander Fountain, we believe. On our way to Melbourne, and look out, here we come. This is Splatham calling, and we're here with Covert Hypnosis, and we're on the hunt for our 10 cache types. We've managed to get our first to find on a trad here. We disappeared mid-conversation to get that one, and we managed to get back in time for the photo shoot at the event cache. And whilst the photo was taken, a multi popped up, so the two of us took off with the second team close behind us, and we joined forces with yet another team for a joint first to find. I'm Splatton.
Covert Hypnosis.
Team Crackers.
Chris Dinich.
And this is the GeoTalk podcast.
G'day, GeoTalk listeners. It's Covert Hypnosis here. Just ringing up for a post-day report on the day out that Splatton and myself had on getting 10 cache types in one day. We were successful in getting 10 cache types, with the highlights of the day being the event in Bendigo, meeting a whole lot of caches, and I have to say that area is covered in caches. I intend to go back there and clean it out when I get time. And the cache in trash out event in Elwood was also a highlight, again, meeting a lot of fellow caches. And not to mention having to run the Where I Go 2 times, both in the morning and in the afternoon, to try to make a faulty cart work right, and then had other issues in the afternoon with the Where I Go cart. Anyway, thanks to GeoTalk, and thanks to all the sponsors of GeoTalk. Look forward to listening to you when it comes on. Bye for now.
Well, congratulations to Covert Hypnosis and Splatum and the crew for setting that record of 10 different cache types in one day. It's no easy feat, particularly when you've got to try and coordinate an event in a CETO, along with even a Where I Go. Sometimes they're a bit tricky to do. But 10 caches in one day, that's quite a feat. I had a look at mine, and my best is 4. Four cache types. I think I've got a Where I Go, an event, a puzzle cache, and a traditional one. So I think I've got a bit of work to do to catch up to that. What's your record? Have you gotten up to the 10? Have you done even more than 10? Are you lucky enough to have done one of the Project 8 caches? If you have, we'd love to hear from you. Drop us an email at geotalkpodcast@gmail.com or call it in on our hotline, 02800 50 436. Time now to have a look at some of the events that are occurring around the country. Now, there's a few that are occurring this weekend, and I won't go through them all, but there's one group of events that are occurring in particular, and that's the Genome Project. Now, it's a GCA / caching games competition that's being run over this summer, over 2010-11, and it involves gnomes, of course, and those events will be occurring on this weekend of the 27th-28th. So if you want to find out if there's one in your area, do a quick search. Otherwise, on the 4th of December is the Havoc at Barrington Tops event that's up in the Hunter Valley. And also on the 4th is the Cape and Cash event being held down in Victoria. On the 5th of December, Christmas by the Lake 2010 by Flipper & Co. in South Australia. On the 11th of December, it's the Lit Swap 2010 by McKee Clan over in South Australia. On the 12th of December, there's the Trackable Race by Enoud and DeVixen down in the ACT. And also on the 12th of December is the New South Wales Mid-North Coast Christmas Get-Together. So that's a couple of events that are occurring around the country. Make sure you check out those. You can obviously get into your pocket queries or head to geocaching.com.au and check out the dashboard to find out the events that are occurring in your state. Well, it's time now to have a look at the GeoTalk mailbag. And don't forget, if you want to send in an email, just address it to geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. The first one's from Steve down in Wollongong. He says, I haven't listened to your latest podcast yet, but wanted to make mention of the Chirp and let you know that I've hidden a cache which has been published for Sydney side. It's called Chirp Away. It's GC2HPF1. I checked that out the other night, and I've noticed that there's already been a couple of finders of that, and they quite enjoyed the Chirp experience. So well done to Steve. So the next one comes from Jeremy, also known as Aussie O's. He wants to say, I, along with thousands of geocachers, want virtuals to come back. Yes, 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 he says, I know there are waymarks, but seriously, who uses waymarks? And he says, sorry to be offensive to any of those who do use it. But he said, when he last checked, the closest waymark was 10 kilometres away, and it was a roundabout. And he's saying, he and everyone else aren't proposing that we have virtuals on every roundabout. However, most of the geocaches support having virtuals in places where normal caches aren't allowed or possible. And he said, thanks for that rant rave. Well, look, you know, it's an interesting point, and I know that a lot of people get passionate about virtuals, and I suppose one of the good things about the Geocaching Australia website, and certainly with the open caching in some of the other countries, is that you can have virtuals. I'm a waymarker. I use it. I do agree there are some pretty lame ones and some horrible ones, but I'm finding that I'm starting to get more and more out of it. And in fact, the latest addition to that website, the Scavenger Hunts, is certainly making it quite interesting. So we'll see what happens and see if Groundspeak change their mind. Somehow, I don't think it's going to happen. Don't forget, if you've got a call that you want to send into the GeoTalk hotline, the number is 800-5436. Don't forget area code 02, so that's 02-800-5436, just like this one we got from Canberra just the other day.
G'day, Darren, it's Mark. Justin. And the other Mark. We've been out placing a motorcycle power trail, if you count 26 cases as a power trail, up in the Canberra Hills. So we've had a really good morning ride, lots of stops, lots of helmets on and off. It's been really good fun. So we'll catch you later. See ya. Bye.
G'day, Geo talking, fellow caches. It's Darth Trader calling in a milestone. I've hit my number 300. It's been about a year. And this is my third one today, but it is number 300. I wasn't too excited because it was just a travel bug hotel, but I was on the phone to Big Matt, who was bragging how he did 120 or something on the weekend in Canberra. And, you know, it's taken me the best part of the year to only do twice as many as what he can do in a weekend. So it's not that great. But, you know, he hasn't been able to find this one. So I have, and I'm rubbing it in. And I'm just picking up a travel bug here, and I've got some other trade items here, an old wasabi container, and I'll pop in a shell, and I might leave that glue stick. I might take that little race car or something. But, yeah, enjoy the show, and yeah, happy with my milestone.
Well, thanks for that, guys. And although I'm not a big fan of the Power Run, I know that there certainly are lots of people who are. And they've sent the guys from Canberra have sent me a link to a YouTube video if you want to check that out and have a look at their Power Run. And certainly those who have done it have enjoyed it. And we might see probably more of them around the country in the near future. And finally, we got one last email, and that's from Tiger's Den. That's a team made up of Serena, Andrew, Attila, and Cordelia. They've been caching since mid-2007, and they just wanted to give a quick plug for their event down in Bendigo. They're holding the Genome Project Bendigo launch. That's GA2740. So that's GA2740. Hi to you guys. Well, for each of you guys who haven't received a path tag already, don't forget to drop an email to geotalkpodcast@gmail.com and we'll send one out in the mail for you. And for the next episode, we're going to have a little bit of a competition. We'll give away a GeoTalk GeoCoin. We only have about three of them left, I think, so they're pretty hard to get hold of, but we'll give one away. All you have to do is ring in or write in with what you want from Santa. What geocaching gift do you want Santa? It doesn't have to be one that definitely will get. It could be as outrageous as you like. Might be a helicopter to get those five fives on the top of mountains. But call it in or email it in, and everyone who gets one sent in will put you in the random draw to win a GeoTalk GeoCoin. Well, that's just about all for this episode of GeoTalk. But before we go, we better give you the answer to the trivia question. How many geocaches are there in Australia and New Zealand that were placed in 2000 and are still around, which by the end of the year will actually make them 10 years old? The answer is in Australia, 7, and New Zealand, 7. Both the same. There we go. So there's 14 caches that are sitting in Australia and New Zealand that are almost 10 years old. Well, before we go, just one quick one. We got an email from Mike the Cashman who said recently the Travel Bugs have been getting a lot of airtime for their geocaching songs. And certainly I've been playing. It's quite a fun CD. If you haven't listened to it, check that out. You might go back a few episodes or do a Google search on the Travel Bugs CD. But he said that there is another geocaching performer by the name of Rob Pierce, and he found this in the iTunes store, and he says the guy is great, check it out. Well, I actually heard one of his original songs or his first songs a while back, but he's got two more since then. So with Rob's permission, thanks very much, Rob, here's his latest song, The Bomb Squad Nuked My Geocache, to take us out for this episode. And until next time, safe geocaching.
After 25 finds, I drive home and I kick off my shoes. I log them all in and I turn on the evening news. The weather is fine, but the pirates have lost once again. So I head for the fridge, but I don't make it out of the den. The newscaster frowns and I see a familiar scene of a stump in the woods and a glen where it's shady and green. But it's crowded with cops and it's crisscrossed with yellow tape. They look very stern, but this isn't a murder or rape. The bomb squad built by Geocache, the Happy Meal toys gone up in a flash. A bog boat's been reduced to ash, the ammo can destroyed. My favorite cache has just been raided, the danger overestimated. The travel bugs exterminated, who wouldn't be annoyed? A muggle had stumbled on a cache I had hidden in the stump. Police were called in, and my ML can's now a green clump. The cops sent a robot to nuke the cache I left behind. If that contraption could get an account, I would give it the find. The bomb squad nuked my geocache, the Happy Meal toys gone up in a flash. The logbook's been reduced to ash, the ammo can destroyed. My favorite cache has just been raided, the danger overestimated. The travel bug's exterminated, who wouldn't be annoyed? I buy my containers at the Army Surplus Store. I bought all their stock and left looking for more. Should have bought Tupperware, lock and lock more. Clear plastic containers more see-through before. The bomb squad built my geocache, the Happy Meal toys gone up in a flash. The logbook's been reduced to ash, the ammo can's destroyed. My favorite cache has just been raided, the danger overestimated. The travel bug's exterminated, who wouldn't be annoyed? The bomb squad built my geocache, the Happy Meal toys gone up in a flash. The logbook's been reduced to ash, the ammo can destroyed. My favorite cache has just been raided, the danger overestimated. The travel bug's exterminated, who wouldn't be annoyed? Who wouldn't be annoyed?